IMPART podcast aims to share how patients from New Brunswick are living with obesity, cancer, diabetes, cardiovascular, and other medical conditions. This podcast also aims to share related topics such as patient outcome, health industry, community, and technology. Hi, my name is Carrie Kalp, and I'm the project manager of the IMPART podcast, and I'd like to welcome you back as we continue listening to part B of our first pilot episode.
Then the head nurse came down, they apologized for the trouble, gave me my medicines, and sent me home.
That's awful.
But I had a push for that. I had to be my own advocate when I could barely walk.
I imagine that a lot of vulnerable people, a lot of vulnerable patients have to be their own advocate.
They do, and it's sad. It shouldn't be that way.
So who do you rely on in those situations? Who do you go to?
I have wonderful friends I'm very close to, and some of them can help me more than just in being my friends. They can help me legally, medically, and such. And I lean on them like they lean on me. And that's who saved me in this situation. The legal advice came from friends who knew what they were doing. I got released because I went to the care of someone who knew how to take care of me. That's the situation I had. Other people don't. Vulnerable patients. There are vulnerable patients in our community all the time. For example, let's say someone that's homeless. They can't get a check. They can't even get assistance. You have to have an address for that, folks. They have an issue. They go to an emergency. The issue's addressed, but they need medications. Let's say infection. I'll throw that out there. They have no money. They can't get it. It's not going to be covered because they're not in assistance. They don't have an address. They can't get coverage. So the person is sent out on their own, ill, without the with a prescription, but they can't fill it. What is important is for these medical facilities to have access
like
to
really
the organizations
my heart to
that
hear
can
these
receive
stories,
these people.
But
and
I
help
do like to hear that some things are working, that there are resources out there, and that there are some organizations that are hopefully collaborating to be able to provide support. It's just
they're absolutely there. There needs more growth, and there is more need, sadly to say, but there are organizations helping and making a difference. I think what's important is to make people who deal with these patients aware of resources that they can offer to these patients beyond themselves, like Fresh Start or something, to help someone get out of homeless or deal with a certain situation or get them to a shelter. Things like that. If they're transgender or vulnerable, reach out to UBU Atlantic and we can give you some help or something, but reach out. And if someone comes out to their doctor, where do I go? I don't know how to help. And if that doctor is informed and knows, they can say, well, here's an organization. Reach out to Gloria, say if it's here or wherever. In Fredericton, they have Fredericton Gender Minorities Group. There's different ones. And get that help. There's PFLAG, which covers, it actually stands for Parents for Lesbians and Gays, but it's trans inclusive. They actually dropped the acronym and kept the name, so it's just PFLAG now. You could reach out to those organizations as well. I just think it's very important that, I kind of expounding this and probably being redundant, that it's about everybody kind of communicating together and being aware of each other so we can steer
right.
People where they need to go.
Because that's one of the biggest issues is when you get in the healthcare system, you don't know how to navigate it. You don't know what your resources are, and you're relying on your physician to be able to tell you, okay, but where do I go? Where do I get support? And if those physicians don't know what's available, how are they supposed to help you?
Absolutely. I don't know if they have them in emergency rooms. There's these small cards that are put out. I think Social Development puts them out. I don't even know if I have one here. I can give them out quite profusely. And what they have is all the community organizations in St. John's, a little wallet-sized card, very fine print. But and it has everything. It, it's It's got like Sophia Recovery Center for Addiction Services. It's got Fresh Start in it. It's got UBU Atlantic in it for help with trans, PFLAG, all these different organizations. It's a few pages, but in a small fold-up wallet-sized card. And something like that being in the emergency room is a big help. Now, maybe it's there and it's not being noticed. Maybe we need a poster instead of a card, because that is a busy place of pandemonium with lots of stuff and distractions going on. I'd like to hear solutions and feedback from within, actually, from people actually in the department. And I think that's someone that if we brought this to would say, yeah, we'd love to have this resource. And I think maybe probably the best way is to do the thing in the wall. They know their workspace. They know their environment. So feedback, right. Dialogue again.
Right? It's all about dialogue.
It is. It is.
You have any questions there, sir? I've got lots. I have lots of questions now.
So we're at we're at 35 minutes now.
Sure. You're doing good? Need a break?
Fine. No.
All right.
I have a sip of water. It's fine, kind of warm here.
It is warm in here.
Oh, good. I thought I was flashing.
I want to go back to Dalmed for a moment.
Sure.
Because a question that I had for you before we even met was, what would you tell a first-year medical student about working with vulnerable patients? What would be three things that you would want them to know going forward?
I think number one is arm yourself with resources. It could be as simple as getting that wallet card and putting it in your wallet, in your gown, or making sure it's accessible for you. And then because you can't predict what kind of patient you're going to get. But when you get one, and whatever their vulnerability is, okay, well, if you reach out to this organization, then, right?
Right. Being prepared.
Second thing, I guess, is just being an open mind and accepting about anything about someone, except that people are different. And don't judge till you know. To be honest, in the medical community, I have, by far and large, people have been awesome, open-minded, intelligent people, and, well, it's medicine, it's people of science, right? By and large, we do have our exceptions, but by and
like
large,
everything.
It is people of science and real-world sober-minded thinking, which I do like.
Yeah, I wonder, because we are talking about healthcare, and these folks traditionally have a science background, do you think their education in a way helps them work with patients who might be transgender? Or
I don't know about that. I think really training on trans issues or whatever it is what they need. It's essential. I've been doing it several years for various universities and such, and just knowing from the dialogue and questions that my presentations get, because I do a very interactive one, or ones, I guess I have several, tells me that, yeah, they need the education. You can't assume, because you've learned medicine, that you understand all the issues of your patients. There are certain issues. Medicine applies socially as well as scientifically or physically. There are social issues, and social issues are a part of medicine. Right back to the homeless person that can't get their prescriptions. Okay, you've dealt with the issue medically, but now we have to deal with the issue socially. And then the question is, how do I do it? What's the answer? Well, answer is reach out to, right?
Right.
And that's the goal I like to see happen, really in any organization, even beyond the medical community. Police, fire departments, anything. It's real world fact-based education that's complete, and resources handed to people that help people so they can help them more, or send them to people that is beyond what they can do.
That just makes sense to me.
If I get a trans person come to me, say I get someone, I've had someone come from another city, they come here and they have addiction issues. And they're here, and they don't know anybody. So you have to connect. So I connect them. I am not an addictions counselor. I'm a good person. I can do things. I facilitate, and I help people. But I get those people to people who are and deal with people with addictions. They actually help you with some knowledge and knowing what they're doing, as opposed to me stumbling through it. Maybe I'll damage you more out of ignorance and goodwill. So I get you to someone that can help you. And that's what I'm trying to have happen in other organizations, so we can refer people appropriately and know who to refer people to. You don't have to memorize everything, just have the resources available.
We have nurse navigators in the hospital. I'm going to start that again.
Sure.
The hospital that Jeff and I work at, there are nurse navigators. And I'm just thinking about, you know, are there enough of them? Are there enough people who are helping people when they're leaving the hospital figure out what the next steps are? Are there enough people like you who can, they might not have all the answers, but they know where to send the right folks? Do you think there are enough people out there who would know those things?
I'd be hesitant to answer the question if there's enough people, because I just don't know. But I think many of them need further training or knowledge about vulnerable patients. There's the thing about patients and there's the thing about vulnerable patients and certain things to learn. A certain patient may have a certain vulnerability or stigma that they're worried about. I don't know. Stigma is very alive. The person that has, I don't know, because of whatever medical conditions, walks very awkward, uses two canes, going to Tim Hortons. This person just wants to get a coffee, maybe talk about the weather to someone. They don't need to be stared at. They don't need to be looked at or pitied. They don't want that.
Right.
They're just out for a walk and a coffee. Right? It's.
Did you want to ask about stigma? We were talking about that earlier. If it discrimination kept people from accessing healthcare.
Yeah, I don't remember.
That's okay. So if we're going to be talking about, we talked on stigma for a moment there.
Mm-hmm.
Has stigma or the fear of being discriminated influenced you in regards to accessing healthcare or influenced people that you know?
Yeah. Let's see. Well, the first real case of that, I reached out for psychological advice regarding transitioning and diagnoses. And the first person I got referred to was the worst person. It was a psychiatrist, and it was a horrible experience. I felt brushed off and unbelieved. It was horrid. I walked out more damaged than when I went in. And I did not seek help for several months after, till I really got myself in a state where I just didn't know what do I do. And then I reached out to local LGBT plus organizations like PFLAG, and got to know some people that maybe I should talk to. Back to dialogue, networking. Is that, that seems to be the catchphrase.
That is the hot word at the moment.
Yeah. And I did get connected to a psychiatrist. Experience has helped countless people navigate this and stuff, and was actually able to give me help.
That's fantastic.
That was needed. If you're vulnerable and you're looking to reach out for help, reach out to the right places. I don't know how else I can say that. If you're trans and you're looking for help, reach out to the trans community if there's one around, or reach out to the local PFLAG. Because these are places that actually deal and they're on the ground and that can steer you towards resources or be a resource to you. There's certain ways.
Yeah.
You just reach out to people that can steer you in the right direction, right? I'm not just going to go into Service New Brunswick, hey, I'm trans, can you help me? No, I'm going to reach out to UVU Atlantic or a similar organization or even your local Pride. You know, they might be able to steer you to the right organization.
It's funny that you brought up a psychiatrist.
Multiple sclerosis. Send someone to the Multiple Sclerosis Society or this resource that they might not be aware of. Sorry, I interrupted.
No, that's okay. What I was going to say was, when I was growing up, and still now I have some mental health issues, and when we were trying to navigate it, I had one bad experience, and that was enough for me to say, I'm too afraid to go see another health professional. And I just think of the benefits of if I had been able to speak to somebody else who knew where I should have gone, how that would have just made my life so much better. Because for about 3 years, I did nothing with my mental health because of one situation. I didn't reach out to any groups. I didn't know how to reach out to anybody. But now with social media, you can go onto Facebook and you can type in St. John Pride and something will come up. And I just think of the benefits of social media in that sense of how these groups can help you navigate these very complicated systems.
That's your situation is a prime example.
It was messy. It was,
vulnerable patient.
My mom and I had this moment of, we're going to call telehealth and see what they say. And then the woman on the line says, well, you should go to Emerge. You should go to the emergency room. And it's like, well, no, that's not even close to what we're asking for. But it was clear just from that conversation, she didn't even know where else to send me.
Right.
So people get desperate. They don't know what else to do. And that's how they end up in places like the emergency room, because you don't know where else to go.
See, that's a great example. And it's another example of, and I'll say agency, I don't know if that's the appropriate term for telecare, that should have this information. They should have these cards of the community resources in front of them. Oh, okay. Well, in your area, we have this, and I think if you reach out to them, that might help you out. Whatever it is. I don't know, we'll just pick multiple sclerosis again because it's fresh in my mind, the word. But reach out to the local society. Here's the contact number and such, and they can help you with this issue, hopefully, or at least steer you in the right direction.
Yeah, I was very relieved to know in the last year that a group was looking at how telehealth navigates and how aware they are of what resources are available to people, especially with people with mental health issues. And they're working on making sure that they're trained where they know where they can send people rather than just diagnosing something or triaging it of maybe you should go to the hospital. It's now, what are your other options? So that gives me some comfort.
Actually, it makes me smile. That's hope. And that's progress. That's initiative. There's the big word.
It is initiative.
Oh, I applaud them for it.
I'm excited about that.
It's wonderful.
How you doing over there?
Great.
You're so quiet.
I know.
You're spectating.
Trying to think of any questions that I have.
Yeah, so.
Are you doing on time?
Yeah, we're 45 minutes now. I just don't know if there's anything else we could ask.
Anything you have for thoughts? Or...
anything. Oh, no. Because I have so many questions. So, okay. Maybe go back to before you were diagnosed with cancer.
Sure.
How did being a vulnerable person affect your health before that time?
Really, it was anxieties that I lived with. I was scared of being found out. I wasn't really sure what I was. I felt like a freak. I thought something was wrong with me, to be honest. I really needed psychological advice. And that's pretty much it. I couldn't out myself to my doctor. I didn't out myself to anyone because I was scared. And then eventually I sought psychological help, and that was worse. And then I reached out to people that are in the community, so to speak, that are on the ground and deal with people like me. And then I was able to get help. I guess that's really the story of that part of it for me. I don't know how much more I can expound.
How are you doing now?
I'm doing quite well. I'm visibly trans. I'm proud. I'm out. I perform on stage. I'm a musician. Last summer, I performed for the Prime Minister.
That's huge.
Oh, yeah. It's wonderful.
You said that so casually. Yeah. Like, oh, you know, I just performed for the Prime Minister.
Let's hear more about that, actually.
Yes.
It was for Fredericton Pride. And I was asked to perform for it, and of course I did, and to support it, and my usual energetic stage style. And I was asked secretly, because of security concerns, would you be willing to play for the Prime Minister during his visit as well, in a private gathering? And I said, sure, I'd love to. So we set that up, and I couldn't announce anything till it started. Security, it is our nation's leader, right? And I got to perform for him. Actually, it was kind of interesting because it wasn't the first time we had been together. I worked with we're talking about Justin Trudeau in this case. I was his AV technician at a teacher's conference before he was in politics. So we had quite the little chit-chat and stuff, and I don't really have anything to share. I have no controversy with you. But anyways, I might come up, we shoot the breeze, get him on stage. He does his thing, come off, and, you know, all that stuff again. And he's off to his world after, and I'm off to mine. And then at Fredericton Pride, we got to meet again, and I'm performing for him now. And I'm Gloria now. I've transitioned, right?
A lot has changed.
Oh, it was kind of neat. So I just went up to chat to him, and I said, so I don't even remember. Remember that teaching conference in St. John years ago? And she said, oh, yeah, that was me. We both had some big changes. You're the prime minister. I'm a woman now.
A lot has happened.
And it was supposed to be like a 3 minutes, but we ended up jabbing for like 20 minutes because we're catching up a little bit too, and right? And then I realized I'm supposed to be on stage performing. I gotta go. I'm supposed to be performing for you. So I went back on stage, and the mingling continued, and that's kind of my story last summer.
That's a good story. Yeah. I would tell that story a lot.
Oh, yeah, it was pretty neat. It was pretty neat. I have an interesting life. I'll say that.
Was music and performing able to help you while going through cancer?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I've been a musician since I was very, very small. I started piano at 4, you know, never looked back, play a bunch of instruments. It's soothing for me. And literally being part of the music community is what helped me tackle cancer. When I was diagnosed and I was going in, I'm self-employed. I have a small production company and I perform and do talks. And that's it. I don't have a proper employer. I've had the odd part-time jobs that fill the gaps till this point where my health is kind of pulling that back. I didn't have the resources to take the months off to have the surgery and recovery. And I didn't know if I'd have the ability to even pay for the treatments that I had to pay for, the injections and such. The music community rallied around me and held this huge benefit. They did it at O'Leary's. There were bands upstairs, bands in back, auctions, all this stuff going on. CBC pushed it. Basically, everybody in the community that I deal with, which seems to be everybody in the music community anyways, we all know each other, rallied and did this big thing, and they saved my life. They paid for it all. Post-surgery, I went through it again with the radiation. It was $1,600 an injection, $250 a month on pills, and all the other ancillary expenses. I sold out my guitar collection. I unloaded basically anything I had of real value beyond what I needed to continue working after post-recovery. And they held another benefit and helped me again. And it paid a couple of months of treatment, but it pretty much bankrupted me. Not legally, but pretty much. I'm high praise and shout out to the music community in the Maritimes. Really, it was people from the community all over, and they rallied and they saved my ass, boys. Sorry, you'll have to bleep me.
Saved your life.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
It sounds like you have a fantastic support system. Time I think about it, it moves me. I mean, those people were there for me. They gave a darn, and they did it.
They did.
Yeah.
They made it happen.
Yeah. Wow. Just blew me away.
And they're still behind you now.
They're still behind me. Yeah. Yeah. My last hospital was unexpected and extended, and then I couldn't work. And I was homeless. I had been homeless for a year. My last employer, my employer that I did audiovisual with, corporate audiovisual, when I transitioned, I lost my job of 18 years. That was a hard pill to swallow. I didn't have the resources, and they held another benefit so I wouldn't lose everything I owned, because everything I was paying $200 a month for storage, little gig money and stuff I could get, and living out of my van. And then I got sick, and then I was going to lose everything I owned, But they rallied and were able to do that for me too. They've saved me a few times. Actually, I give back to the community, but not because, but I have to say, I do owe the community as much, but that's not why I give, I always have. I'm production manager for the Empty Stocking Front, have been forever. I'm always involved, and I try to be part of my community and give back anyways.
Where do you think you'd be today without that support system? Because many vulnerable patients would not have the support.
I'd probably be in the grave.
Yeah.
I can't say that definitively, but yeah, I probably wouldn't be here. Yeah, I was ready to go. I inventoried everything so my wife could sell things and not be ripped off and stuff. And it's, yeah.
That's tough.
Wow.
I can't even imagine that.
It's strange. I don't know how to describe it. Facing your own mortality, it makes you realize, but it at least helps you realize what's important. You realize what counts. You don't care about that car. I don't care about having a certain house or that guitar, I guess in my case. You really don't. You care about the bonds, the genuine bonds you make with people. You care about the people close to you. I don't care if you're a billionaire on your deathbed. You want the people that care about you at your side. Right, and that's...
Nobody's bringing their money to the grave.
Yeah, that too.
So what's important to you now? What are you more focused on now after going through all this?
Well, recovery, obviously. I guess that's number one, try to get through this now. It's nice to be at a hospital. Really just be me, push forward. I'm back in the studio next month. I'll be finishing off my album that got shelled for quite an extended period, but that should be done by the summer. So it'll be nice. I'll have my music finally downed. And, well, if I go, at least it's in the can and done, right? I'll have that little legacy of whatever I have to share to contribute. Continue to make a difference and just really be me and grow.
Can you tell us a little about your album?
Sure. As yet unnamed, it might just be called Gloria. I picked out the artwork. My wonderful friend, Tyson Ardo, artist, did a wonderful sketch that I want to use, although he may want to do another one because he's so creative. We'll see. It's just various songs by me. One I did a preview of last year, but it was it's not the album version. It was flute, guitar, bass, and vocals, but I played everything. It was just layered. And it was a preview of it, but it got some airplay. It's got some airplay across the country, so it's got a little bit and noticed a bit. I think the biggest one that'll take off that seems to be the most popular is one I call the Friendship Song. And it's just a song about being with your friends and how cool that is. It's a pretty upbeat one, and it's high energy, and I usually open the show with it and gets people moving and having some fun. And
that's exciting.
Yeah.
It's coming out.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
When can we expect it to be out?
I would expect by end of the summer. Most of the bed tracks are complete now. I'll be going into the studio early May. I won't say the 1st of May, but pretty close to that. And we'll finish off my tracks, and then it's really the timing of other musicians to get in to put their thing in for my drummer to come in and then lay his tracks for... I have a cello player on one track, so I want her on to, but at her time too. I just can't say, okay, you're here, there. No, when she can, she'll come in and we'll get that track down and a couple other things. My bass player, I've done rudimentary bass tracks himself, but I want my bass player there because I want to, I want to reproduce the album live, right?
And, that's the goal.
And that's pretty much it.
I think all three of us are music buffs from what I can gather.
I think so, yes.
And I really like that about you.
Oh, ditto. It's mutual.
When I go through something tough, I usually listen to the same bands and songs and albums over and over again. Like, I cannot listen to Rumors by Fleetwood Mac without feeling like I'm in grade 7 in my bedroom crying over a boy. But it's my go-to, like, I'm going through something hard music. Do you have something like that? Do you have an album that gets you through tough times?
Oh, to be honest, I usually end up running to the piano and then something pours out of me. It's more expressive with me. I have my favorite albums and stuff. There's quite a collection. Like, I love The Tragically Hip and stuff like that. And Fleetwood Mac, of course.
Obviously.
That Rumors is amazing, that whole album.
It's perfect.
Oh, yeah. Lindsey Buckingham is one of my guitar heroes. But usually I end up sitting at the piano and I don't know if compose is the word, because most of the songs I write, I don't really write them. They just pour out of me and I get them written down and captured, recorded before I forget them. That seems to be what happens, but they're genuine and they're real. I say what I mean,
yeah.
Which is probably why people like them, I suppose. They, you can relate. It's not something I'm just trying to make for people to like. I'm just sharing. And for all our differences, we're all a lot the same. And it just seems to work.
You're good? I could just keep talking about music all day.
Oh, sure. Anything you wanted to, I'm good.
Were you able to make music while going through treatment? Was it pouring out of you during that time?
Yeah, I wrote a few songs. A couple will be on the CD. Some of them I just save and I throw them out at the odd live performances. Really about healing. There's a couple really about strength, just knowing that you have that internal strength or discovering it and stuff, right? You sometimes you don't realize your internal resources till you really have to access them and push them, and then you realize, oh, I can go a mile, right, kind of thing, so to speak, or metaphorically.
Sinking it or swimming really tests people. It's people think they're just gonna sink, and it's like, no, you really are gonna swim. Like, it just forces you. There's something in us that makes us swim.
Yeah, I think my military service kind of gave me a lot of that internal discipline, helped me. It showed me that you can go beyond what you thought were your limits. What you think your limits aren't your limits. You can push farther. You can go. Yeah.
I did not know you were in the military.
Yeah, a long time ago. It was Cold War days. I was decorated with a special service medal with NATO bar and a couple of tours, and I just did my service, came home, peace and love, and that's me now.
And that's that.
A long time ago. Yeah. I'm old. I'm 57.
You're not old. So how are you feeling now? How is your health now?
Pretty horrible.
That's an honest answer.
Yeah, pretty horrible. I just came out of hospital and a lot of bleeding and complication issues, and new things are up. So back to the OR on the 23rd and more screening and these issues. And really, I'm just hoping for the best. I'll take what comes, and I'll just keep going as long as I can, really.
Thank you so much for coming, Gloria. It was great being able to speak to you today.
It was
today.
An absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me.
Is there anything, you have the mic in front of you, is there anything else you want us to know about vulnerable populations going through healthcare system?
My message is really to the medical community. Try not to buy yourself a lot of unnecessary stress. Try to arm yourself with the resources that you can hand over to patients. So it'll help you do your job, or help you get someone to someone else that it's the job for somewhere else, and you can help them. You can steer patients. Really, that's it. Try to arm yourself with the resources, or get whomever, whatever you're working for, to arm you with the resources. Try to do that. Sometimes it's uphill, but the battle is attainable, and sometimes it isn't a battle. It's just about having that. Here's the word again, dialogue.
It's the word of, I think this podcast is just dialogue.
There today. We go. Word of the podcast, exactly. Dialogue.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
This was the pilot episode of Impart Podcast. Stay tuned for the next episodes. Be part of the solution with Impart. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and visit our website, impart.team.